And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to part one of a Low Post Woj Pod crossover mega event as I jump back into 2020 after a blissful 6 months living in the late 90s. And I can't think of anyone better to jump into 2020 with than the guy who knows everything that's going on, senior NBA insider. I think that's your title, Adrian Wojnarowski. How are you doing?
Zach, I'm great. Welcome back. I don't think you ever really left.
I miss Rick Smits and Antonio Davis already.
I have one story. I didn't weigh in much, and I haven't really watched The Last Dance yet. I sort of seen bits and pieces sometimes when it came on in the background, but I haven't like sat through. But I do have one memory of that Nets-Bulls series. I believe it was game three at the Meadowlands in 98. The Bulls were wrapping up the sweep. And I remember Kerry Kittle standing around midcourt. I think it was during a dead ball. It might have been somebody shooting a free throw. And John Calipari was just laying into him, just as he was wont to do as an NBA coach back in 98. And I remember Jordan standing there with his arms folded, just kind of curious, his arms at his side. And he's sort of curiously watching John Calipari yelling at Kerry Kittles. And he turns to Kittles and essentially says, "You gonna take that from him?" and that was I think John survived like a 3-17 start the next year, and he was back.
Bobby Marks is still clinging, I think, to the idea that if only a couple of breaks had happened, his New Jersey Nets, which had a stupid fox wearing sunglasses, I think, as its mascot, Sly Fox, could have actually upset the Bulls. Okay, that's enough. Back to 2020. The NBA appears on course to restart at Walt Disney World, and I think in the next 5 days, and it might take longer than that to really nail down the ultra specifics, but we're going to learn something about exactly what that is going to look like, how many teams are going to go. So I will let's set the scene, and then I'll let you give your intel. When you call people, first of all, this is an incredibly complex situation. There are so many competing agendas, including people within the same team who have different agendas. It's not even within teams are players and owners and management necessarily aligned on how this should work. And so, when you hear the NBA zeroing in on this or zeroing in on that, it's just not true because there are just so many moving parts and so many different proposals, and the NBA has no clarity yet on what's going to happen. And I think that alone is one reason you hear a lot of people in the league throw their hands up in the air and say, well, let's just do 1-16. Let's just do not 1-16 seeding. Let's just take the playoff teams, have the playoffs. That's it. And I think you hear that for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously fewer teams makes the bubble smaller, decreases the chance of something bad happening. Number two, Damian Lillard finally expressed this on the record today, just before we started recording. There is a lack of will in some of the lottery teams to come back unless they have something to play for. They don't want to come back. Some of them, some players, some coaches, whatever. Again, it's divided. Don't want to come back to play 5 regular season games after a whatever week training camp and go live in a bubble and all of this just to fill out the schedule. And so dovetailing from that, then you have all of these proposals of, okay, if those teams want something to play for, let's give them something to play for. Let's put the playoffs up for grabs. And that's where you get the World Cup style group play proposal, which we're going to talk about. That's where you get various play in tournament proposals that we're going to talk about. And then that leads some of the skeptics right back to, why don't we just go with the playoffs? Because all of those things are so complicated. They're so new. They're so foreign to how the NBA has conducted business. And there is already a worry among the best teams that if they win, there's going to be an asterisk attached to their championship forever, and the asterisk is going to get brighter and bolder the more unfamiliar and strange the NBA playoff format is. And so that leads a lot of people back to, oh, just take the playoff teams and have the playoffs like normal. But I think you've heard, and I've heard, as simple and clean as that is, there are obvious economic reasons and other reasons why I think there's a strong will within parts of the NBA, both in the league office and among teams, to play more games than just the playoffs. And that obviously involves bringing more teams back than just the 16 teams. So start there. Where is that? How strong is that will to do that? Where is it coming from? And sort of, here on Tuesday morning, where exactly are we?
Well, you're right, Zach, in that it is so complicated and there are so many competing agendas, and it has become an exercise in many respects in politicking, in campaigning for the particular agenda that might suit your organization or where your team is. You know, the contenders don't want to go right to the playoffs. They want to be able to play some tune-up games. They don't want to just walk into a 1-8 series or a 2-7 series, whether that might mean scrimmages, whether that might mean inter-conference, inter-division tune-up games that aren't going to impact their place necessarily in the standings. Like the Lakers and Clippers don't want to have to go play each other a couple times. Like hypothetically, if they were to play some, like just within their division. So there's lots of that. But I think the fight is on a couple fronts. There is still a contingent of teams at the very bottom who want to be included. Travis Schlenk, Atlanta's general manager, told me, like, they want to play. They want to get back. And I don't think the Hawks are so concerned, for example, and there's other teams like them, that they need to be in the tournament or they have to play, have a chance to get in the postseason. Other teams at the bottom would like to be in one big, let's put all the lottery teams, the bottom of the lottery teams, in a knockout tournament and let one of them emerge and be involved in a play-in to just give them some reason to play.
Give the stars a reason to play, because some of these stars are going to say, Damian Lillard just said it. Brad Beal essentially said it on my podcast a month ago.
Right.
You know, if we come back and we got nothing to play for, Rui Hachimura, Troy Brown Jr., you got all my minutes. Go
right.
ahead.
And Zach, I can't imagine a scenario where Portland would be in this. If you're going to ask Portland to come back and play, who you know, they're among three teams that essentially 3.5 games behind Memphis, they're going to be in some kind of a pool play, a play-in tournament. The teams who might not have, who potentially could be asked to play and might not have a chance, a pathway into the playoffs, the Golden States, the Clevelands, the Atlantas, the Detroits, the New Yorks, the teams at the far end of the standings. And that's the hard part for a lot of those teams. Their agenda, some of their agendas are, we don't want to go 9.5 months or 9 months without our team playing meaningful, structured basketball, that you're putting us at a competitive disadvantage moving forward. And many of those organizations see this as, you know, kind of like a little bit of a veteran summer league to return to. And if you're Portland, hypothetically, and you say, hey, we might be able to get Zach Collins and Yusuf Nurkic back, and you know, Kent Bazemore played well for us late in the year, and you know, Carmelo in a role where maybe you don't ask him to have to do as much. That's a dangerous team. That's a little more the team that they thought they'd have at the beginning of the year. New Orleans, which started to come together, and Zion's in very good shape. He's been able to work out. And so those teams have certainly more to play for. But if you're the NBA, do you want a scenario where Luka Doncic gets knocked out of the seventh seed and can't go to the playoffs? Like, even if you don't consciously make a decision based on that, that's in the back of your mind. And I think the teams at the bottom, some of the cases they're making, and I wrote about it in a piece that's up on .com now, a piece you contributed to, with a few elements of it, Zach. Like, what about the idea that we get all 30 markets, the fans of all 30 teams invested in this restart? And listen, we'll get into, these are the reasons why you'd want to do this. There are a lot of reasons. You mentioned one at the top, health and safety. The fewer people there, like the fewer, you know, take out 8 or 10 teams, that's what, 350 people if you want to include traveling parties.
And half are gone after the first round, so you're down to 8 right away, and you've never had any more than 16. That's the appeal, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a big deal. But we'll get into the downside of bringing all those teams back. But this is for Adam Silver and by extension Michelle Roberts and the Players Association, because in the end they have to agree on this, and the owners have to be on board. Listen, Adam Silver knew this from the beginning. There's going to be a decision or a series of decisions that are going to leave some people feeling that they're an aggrieved party, that it wasn't fair to them. This isn't what we wanted. And that's why he's been selling the idea all along. Come on, guys, we've got to do what we think is for the greater good of the league. And that's a little easier to do in theory when you're unsure whether the league can even come back. Now that it's starting to get specific, you see the politicking and the lobbying really intensifying to the league office, to the Players Association with teams.
Well, let me editorialize for a second here and say any team, like for the good of the league, is for the good of everybody who works around the league. And like, we don't know what the next 2 years are going to be like. The financial realities are scary. And any team that is sitting there, well, I don't know if I want to come back, you know, for this reason. I sympathize with not wanting to come back if I have nothing to play for. I don't sympathize with, well, what if I win a couple games and my lottery odds are screwed up? Like, just buck up. Just, you stunk the whole season. It's for the good of the league. Buck up and come play. Stop being so selfish. This is a global pandemic that is threatening the very stability of the thing that we all get our income and our jobs from. Everyone, arena workers, everyone, think beyond your freaking lottery odds or whatever for 5 seconds and come back and play if the league asks you to play. Now, I am sympathetic to the teams who say, well, we're out of it. Why am I going to do all this to play 5 regular season games? I get that. And I'm going to make my proposal in a second, but I actually don't like the idea. I don't like the idea of all 30 teams having a chance to make the playoffs. And if you take that idea to its extreme, the Warriors have been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs already. Steph Curry is healthy. They just traded for Andrew Wiggins. Which may or may not.
You know what?
I forgot
he played for them. When I keep thinking about who's on their team, I forgot Andrew Wiggins is there.
Draymond Green is like hungry to try hard again. I don't think Klay Thompson comes back in any circumstance, but it would be freaking delightful if he did. Like, are you prepared to open the playoffs to 30 teams, and a team that is already mathematically eliminated from the playoffs actually advances? Now, maybe they could have some caveat that the Warriors can't make it. Every team but the Warriors can make it. I don't know. But look, the bottom line is this. As much as people want a clean solution and 16 teams, regular playoffs, it's the cleanest, it's simplest, wash your hands of it. There are so many factors that are pushing the league to at the very least explore how do we get 20 teams, 24 teams, 30 teams, some amount of teams, because A, some of those teams want to play. They want to play because they have a chance to make the playoffs. They want to play because they might satisfy their local TV agreements. And the league wants them to play, or maybe wants them to play, because every single game you get is a big deal financially versus just the playoffs is really not that many games.
That's right. And there's so many, and you knew this would be the case. Like, when I say there's teams who are at the very bottom who very much want to play, there's others who are very ambivalent about it. And to your point, hey, we're fine with just leaving our lottery odds right where they are. We're not interested in coming back and just losing a bunch of games or being in a position where we might steal a game or two. We don't want to hurt our lottery odds. That is part of it. I will say this. I think in general, there's nobody saying, going to Adam Silver saying, you know, really being aggressive and saying, we don't want to play. Don't put us in this situation. I think it's ambivalent. I think it's, hey, listen, we're going to do what's right. And if you need us, we're going to be there. And I think too, one of the elements that I think they're considering is in a normal season, if you're the Warriors, and you're just playing out the string at the end of the season and you're playing 5 to 7 games in April and you're not playing Steph Curry and you're not playing Draymond and you're playing, you know, Damian Lee and Eric Pascal and some fine young players.
Jordan Poole is going to shoot 25 times, baby. Let's let it fly.
Right. In a normal season, it would just sort of end in obscurity. There's always a number of teams who are just playing out the string. It's bad basketball. None of us are really, unless you're buying a ticket to that game, you're probably not watching it. But this will be different. This won't be the end of something. It will be the start of something new. And we already know the quality of play, even among the contenders. And I was talking to a GM on a very good team yesterday about this. And you know, he said, like, we're not going to look great. We're going to be rusty. It's going to take us a while. Could you imagine how bad the basketball is going to be? And is that the first thing you want the world to see coming out of this, coming out of a three-month layoff with teams essentially playing glorified G League rosters? Or do you want to at least put teams out there that would just represent the game better? And I do think that is a factor, or and it should be a factor in this decision.
Now more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and by reducing emissions. That's good. And right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon every day with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. This is definitely a deal you can count on. It's quick and easy to join. Just download the free Make It Count app or go to makeitcount.com/radio and start saving today. This offer is valid only at participating Marathon stations. Remember, wherever you need to go, be safe. The people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Do you want to hear my idea?
I can't wait for your idea. I've been waiting for days for this.
I think the right number of teams to come back is 20. I think they should bring back 20 teams. They should bring back the 8 playoff teams in the East because there's a giant gap between Orlando in 8th and Washington in 9th. Goodbye, Washington. Goodbye, Charlotte. Goodbye, Chicago. You all stink. I don't want to watch you play anymore. 12 teams in the West have a legitimate chance to make the playoffs. Memphis had the hardest remaining schedule of all those teams. Mm-hmm. New Orleans had the easiest. New Orleans mathematically was actually likely to pass them and make the playoffs. Portland, San Antonio, and Sacramento are all there. So we're taking 20 teams, okay? And I think that is the number that they're basing this World Cup-style group stage thing, which we can talk about later. I actually quite like that idea, but let's put that aside. My idea was, since there is such a huge gap between the top 6 in the East and Brooklyn and Orlando, and the top 7 in the West and Memphis and all the teams behind them, the those 13 teams, top 6 East, top 7 West, you're in the playoffs, you're locked in. You come and you scrimmage and you do some stuff to get tuned up. I don't know how that happens. Brooklyn, Orlando, Memphis, San Antonio, Sacramento, Portland, and New Orleans. 7 teams are put in some sort of funky tournament for the last 3 of 16 playoff spots. That's my idea. You can organize that tournament any way you like. There's lots of different ways to do it. You should probably give Memphis and Brooklyn and Orlando as the incumbent playoff teams a better chance to make those last 3 spots, and that's how we get to our 16. And that's how you get a play-in tournament. Now, we can talk all about the downsides of that. The next question for my idea is, now you get your 16 teams, how the hell do you seed them? The easiest thing to do is seed them 1 to 16 regardless of conference, because you've already threatened Brooklyn and Orlando's spot anyway, so seed them 1 to 16 regardless of conference. That idea is going to be a tough sell for all the Eastern Conference teams. For Brooklyn and Orlando, who will rightly argue, wait a second, we were in the East the whole year, now we're not in the East, that's not fair. Yeah. For Milwaukee, who has to look at a bracket that has them play the Clippers and then the Lakers in consecutive rounds at the end of the playoffs, that's not fair. Okay, fine, whatever. Then I thought, spinning forward a little bit, let's just say Brooklyn and Orlando both fall on their faces in that 7 teams for 3 spots tournament. They're out. They lose. Mm-hmm. And we have 2 extra Western Conference teams. Okay? Okay, so if you want to keep East versus West, keep the top 6 in the East, and then this year we just sort of pretend Memphis is the 7th seed in the East, New Orleans is the 8th seed in the East, whoever is the 8th seed in the West, and we go from there. And that got me thinking, is that a way that we can take the 16 best teams going forward in normal seasons without necessarily scrapping the East versus West structure of the playoffs? Because I have actually become, I used to be big pro, let's just take the 16 best teams, forget these East weaklings who sneak in every year because the conference stinks, leave them out, take the better West teams. I've actually come around to the idea that you will lose, the damage you will do to rivalries and the decrease in the chances of teams facing each other in the playoffs multiple years in a row is a very serious damage to the sport. And so I like the idea of keeping East versus West just for that reason. We all just watched it in The Last Dance. We all lived it with Bulls, Pistons, Celtics, Pistons, all these teams that had to play each other multiple times, Pacers, Knicks. So, okay, if you keep the top seven in whatever conference, and then you just flip in the extra team that's better every year from currently the West in most years, not this year, and you make that team the eighth seed in the East, you've kind of done your job of preserving East versus West. And maybe that's a way we can spin it forward and just do 1-16 every year without monkeying around East versus West. Like Memphis, Phoenix, the year Phoenix won 48 games and didn't make it. You're the eighth seed in the East this year. Now, the obvious con of that is it's not fair to the number one seed in the East. If Boston is the number one seed and Portland is the number eight seed in the East for this particular year, it's not fair that Boston has to fly all the way across the country to play Portland. There are ways to deal with that. You could allow Boston to pick its first-round opponent. But then I think the number one seed in the West would say, well, do we get to pick our first-round opponent? The number two seed in the East would be like, we got to go to Portland. So maybe my idea is untenable, but I became briefly fascinated with the idea of taking the 16 best teams but keeping the conference structure as intact as you can, particularly at the top for rivalry purposes. But my idea for this particular season, 20 teams in, 13 playoff teams, 7-team tournament for the last three playoff spots. That's my idea.
It's a fascinating idea. And it, in terms of really trying to make this as competitive of a postseason as you can to ensure maybe the highest quality of matchups in basketball, I think it works. And maybe under emergency circumstances in a pandemic when Adam Silver could sell it and teams aren't losing home playoff receipts because you're taking an Eastern team out of the playoffs, potentially they're not losing the home games. Why you can't sell 1-16 to the league is because Charlotte, Washington, go down the list, Orlando, teams who would be on that Eastern Conference playoff bubble, like you need 2/3, 3/4 approval of the Board of Governors to get that through. And those, listen, we know the vote would be 15-0 among the Western Conference owners to implement this, but you would not get enough owners, if any, in the East to go along with it. But these are unique circumstances, and you brought this up, and it's in our story, Zach, the idea of one of the scenarios of just including the Western teams essentially in the pool play / play-in that are within the 3.5 game range of the eighth seed, Portland, New Orleans, Sacramento, and the Spurs, whereas you have a bigger disparity between 8 and 9 in the Eastern Conference. That's possible. Now, there's going to be some teams who don't like that. Some of the teams in the East, I think Washington and Charlotte are much more interested in fielding teams and going and playing in this if they have a chance to get in the playoffs. Bradley Beal is going to be more motivated if all of a sudden he can get in a shootout to get his team in the postseason or to get them in, you know, that 7th or 8th seed. So because of these circumstances, Adam Silver, the Players Association, have a lot of latitude. And I think the owners are willing to be open-minded to a certain point where it's, yes, like this isn't necessarily great for my team, but we all understand we better put a product out on the floor in these 2+ months that people want to watch, that they're invested in, and then use that to springboard into next season when we don't know if we're going to have fans in the stands or if we're going to have socially distanced fans in the stands, that we need to hit the ground running when we know it's not going to be easy for the product to look great coming off the layoff. And we're going to lose. There will be a novelty of playing in Orlando, Zach. Like the teams are back and they're playing and it'll be exciting for a few games. And then all of a sudden I do wonder, without the enthusiasm of the crowd, the idea of it even as a television event, that LeBron makes some incredible play that normally would have an arena erupting and high-fiving as the other team calls timeout and goes to the bench. And he's just going to make that play, and he'll get a couple back slaps, and then in silence he'll go to the to the bench for the timeout. To me, for the casual fan, not the junkie like you and I wonder how invested it, it's going to be harder to be invested in that environment. I'm not saying they shouldn't play because of that, but it's going to be a challenge. And so everybody in the league has to be thinking about what's the best show we can put on here, and while also keeping the legitimacy of a playoff structure that crowns a legitimate NBA champion.
Well, Brooklyn and Orlando will throw a fit at my plan, at any plan that jeopardizes their standing as cemented playoff teams in the East. And any, and as you said, all the East owners, probably all of them, would not want 1-16, even now, because I think some of them would view it as opening Pandora's box to 1-16 becoming a permanent thing, even though I don't think that's really on the table as anything like a permanent thing, even if they do it this year. And as I said, Milwaukee would be looking at a different bracket that now features them having to go through both LA teams. Brooklyn and Orlando would say, wait a second, we were in the East all year, why us? I have to say, though, just about 1-16 in general, there are two legitimate reasons why that's a non-starter. Number one is travel. And the fans can say private jets, this and that, all you want. It's a big, big issue, and it's a blood issue for the coastal teams. They do not want to travel cross-country. And if you're getting in at 3 in the morning and crisscrossing time zones all the time, it does have an effect. And the rivalry thing I mentioned before is a real thing. Your thing, the thing you brought up about all the East teams that get gifted these playoff spots because the East sucks every year, I could not be any less sympathetic to those teams. I could stop sucking, be better, and also, if you don't make the playoffs in a 1-16 system, guess what you get? A lottery pick. And we just tweaked the lottery system so that even your okay lottery pick has more value because it has a better chance of moving up.
What if I keep blowing that lottery pick? Maybe I stink, what? Zach.
These teams that are so short-sighted about two games worth of gate receipts as the top seed in the East kicks the crap out of you four times in a row. I can't even have a conversation with them. I like my 20 team idea and my 17 play in tournament.
Can I just say, Zach, you are fully back. You are fully back from 1998.
Yeah, I guess I am. I think 20 teams is the right number. That feels like the right number to me. And I think my suggestion is too complicated and too threatening to Brooklyn and Orlando. I've heard some people actually say, if those teams on the bubble, if those seven teams or five teams, whatever you want to do it, are playing real meaningful games, while the solid playoff teams, the set playoff teams, are kind of scrimmaging and messing around, maybe those bubble teams that actually get into what become the playoffs have an unfair advantage because they're in more of a rhythm than the top teams. I don't necessarily buy that. So let's just talk about the two. So if my proposal is too complicated, but we are determined to bring more than 16 teams, I think we end up in one of two places. Number one, the simplest thing is just have a five-team play-in tournament for the last spot in the West. Mm-hmm. And I just, without any intel that that's a popular idea, that to me seems like a logical landing spot because it preserves the East teams. It lets them cling to their Eastern Conference playoff status. It creates something for the teams that come back to play for, something concrete, without bringing back too many teams. The problem, I think, from the league standpoint would be it's just not that many games. Now, maybe you can make it more games. You can make it an extended round robin, but it's not as many games as the World Cup style group play that has been proposed in the GM survey. And we can talk a little bit about now. But I think my idea is too complicated, but I do feel like 20 feels right to me.
That number is a number that they're absolutely talking a lot about, 20, with the caveat that teams 20 through 24, like the next grouping of teams, let's say that would be Phoenix, right? That would be
Washington, Charlotte, Chicago.
Different agendas with those teams about wanting to play. I know this, that there are a few teams who don't want the embarrassment of if the league goes to 24 and let's say they leave out the bottom three in each conference. There's some who are going, just do 20. Because if you do 24 and you leave us out, like it's embarrassing to our organization. Don't put us in that position. I've talked to others who are like, that's fine with us. We're keeping our lottery pick. You know, we'll see you. We'll see you in the fall. And that's fine with them. Again, there's going to be people upset with how this plays out. And I think for Adam Silver, you know, he's, to his credit, he's listening to all of them. He's talking one off as groups. He's talking one off with them, as are others in the league office. And I think too, you know, there's some teams who are, I don't think Adam Silver has gone and said to anybody, like, are you just okay with us? Are you just okay with being out of this? I think teams have been really proactive with saying we want to play. And even those who, again, who are a little ambivalent about it, like, they're not going to drag their feet to it. They're going to see some value in getting their players back in the facility, playing, having a few weeks of practice, again, treating it like a summer league. But the expense, there's just so many factors in this one, Zach. And again, we talked about it at the top, the idea of 30 teams over the last several days feels a little more like a long shot than it did maybe even a week ago.
I think it's still at the very edge of the board. I agree. It's been taken all the way off the board.
It has not been taken off the board. Right.
Let's do the World Cup thing and then we'll mm-hmm. we'll wrap here. So I think personally the 20 team number is also the basis of the World Cup style group stage thing. Here's how the group stage would work very briefly. Here's one way it could work. They don't know exactly how it would work. It could work many different ways. The easiest way is four groups of five teams. Okay. Group A, Group B, Group C, Group T, five teams each. The groups are not randomly drawn. They're drawn so that they all represent the various strata of the league. So one elite team, couple really good teams, one middling team, one of the lottery, one of the either Brooklyn, Orlando, Memphis, or the teams that are currently in the lottery, something like that. All the groups are about equal. Everyone plays each other some amount of times, minimum twice, possibly more if we want to jack up the games. At the end of that, you look at the standings of each group head to head. Top two come out. Now, if you have four groups, that's easy. You now have eight teams and you effectively go into the second round of what is normally the second round of the playoffs. You could have five groups and take the five winners and the three best second place teams. You could do lots of different things, but that's the general idea of the group stage. Here is why. I think when I first heard that idea, I thought, well, no one's going to support this idea. I actually think it has some support, and particularly it has some support from I think it should have some support from the bubble teams. What the objection I've heard to it is from the sort of solid mid-rung playoff teams who say, wait a second. I'm in a group now and New Orleans gets to be in this. Okay. And Portland gets to be in this. These teams won 12, 13 games. Fewer than we did. If I have a bad week or one of my players gets the virus or Zion goes nuclear for four games, New Orleans gets a second round playoff spot and I go home and it doesn't even feel like I made the playoffs. That doesn't seem fair to me. And I think the league would counter with two things. Number one, it's all the playoffs. It's just a 20-team playoffs this year, not a 16 playoffs. So you made the playoffs, you just didn't get to the second round. And number two, I think they could make a reasonable argument. Like, just take Boston, for example. Is Boston better off facing Philadelphia in the first round, as they would now in both 1-8 and 1-16? Or are they better off getting dumped into one of these groups and you see what happens? Is Indiana better off facing Miami in the first round, best of seven, or are they better off being dumped into one of these groups and say, give your shot? I don't know that those teams are actually harmed as much as they think they are. I actually think that's quite an interesting idea. I hope people in the league thought enough about it before just saying, eh, I don't like it. It's too different. It's going to be an asterisk thing, blah, blah, blah. I hope they thought about it because I quite like it, actually, as I think about it more.
Zach, let me ask you this. Does that plan in your mind ultimately give the best team in the league, the best couple teams in the league, the easiest possible path to the NBA Finals? Or does this ultimately make it more difficult for the best team to have to face the next best teams in the conference semis, in the conference finals, and then even in the final? Because I am not sure that the NBA is terribly interested in a finals that would make it harder for the Lakers to get to, or even the Clippers. But come on, let's start with the Lakers. And I'm not, that doesn't mean, I don't know if the NBA wants a structure that doesn't include Luka Doncic in the playoffs. So
that's the risk of
you
it.
Have
that's
to, the risk right. That's the risk, sure. Isn't it?
And I, the answer to your question is, I think without having done extensive studies on it and asked the Kevin Peltons of the world to run 1,000 simulations, my guess is its effect on that is not big, because I don't think you could really do anything other than a single elimination tournament that would really have a dramatic effect on those teams' chances of advancing. But I do think it increases their chances of not getting out of what is essentially the first round, from some percentage that is very close to zero to something that's a little higher than zero. And I agree that's dangerous. And I just want to end with this, and then we can pivot over. The asterisk thing is everywhere. Everyone is saying it. Everyone in the league is worried about it. Shaq said it, you know, and this is like, as stupid as this is, Phil Jackson saying the word asterisk about the 99 Spurs has stuck 20 years later. Okay. I get why people are saying that. It's going to be different. Some of these ideas strike people as gimmicky. If a player gets the virus and it's God forbid, you know, if a superstar gets it and it just upends the whole playoffs, there's an asterisk. I get that. I actually think it could go the other way. I think winning this season, if it provided enough guys stay healthy, I think winning this season could be a badge of honor. I think being the champions in this environment and toughing it out and winning in an unfamiliar setting, in an unfamiliar, you know, bracket or whatever, amid a pandemic with the world watching and clamoring to watch sports. Even if a couple of things go wrong here and there and the playoffs aren't normal and the wrong guy gets injured and this and that, and guys get injured every year in the playoffs, I think the asterisk could go the other direction and it becomes a team that we remember forever as a team that won during the pandemic as less an asterisk than a badge of honor. And I haven't seen a lot of people say that, really hardly anyone. I just don't think the asterisk is automatically a negative thing. I think this year being different could make it memorable and honorable and something that the team that wins is proud of and that fans are proud of them for having accomplished.
Here's the thing. There is an asterisk on everything in our world right now. There's an asterisk on my son's junior year of high school, my daughter's sophomore year of college. It is not what anyone expected. Remember that, like, there is so much that the process of getting to anything this year was so dramatically changed. Why would we think the NBA's champion would be treated any differently? It, just like probably that whoever wins the World Series in baseball, I think it is the least of the NBA's problems. And I think whoever wins a championship, I mean, actually, I don't even know what kind of parade you could have. I guess you could do the boat parade in San Antonio might be, though you could have the people on the sides. But point is, I guess you have individual floats, right? Everybody, you couldn't have two guys on each end of the float, whatever it is. What is at stake for the NBA is not whether the champion gets all their due on First Take this year, or with us, or with anybody. The future of this league is at stake. How this league is going to look, not just this year or next year, but for years to come. There are still potentially very dark scenarios for a lot of franchises financially, and for the competitive balance of this league, for small market teams who have no idea how they, without fans next year or without revenue sharing, are going to be able to put any kind of competitive team on the floor or pay their employees. I think, I know that's what we talk about, but the legitimacy of the champion, while it is relevant and has value, how about the entire foundation and baseline of the league? And to me, whatever best helps to preserve that to propel this league into whatever next year is going to look like is what the NBA should do, not how it affects the legacies of a few different individuals who might be on the championship team. How's that?
I think it's well put. We still have a lot to talk about, so let's end part one of this and pivot over to the Woj pod, and we will pick it up there.